We have to talk about consciousness. Our life is actually a midpoint between the two deaths. To use the sexual energy in order to achieve enlightenment. The three-dimensional spiral shape encoded in our DNA, in our biology. Hello, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Discomfort Zone podcast. I'm here as usual, and I'll be honest with you, I am kind of not up to my usual standard, not 100% today. It's just been a crazy week, actually. Getting ready for the flight. We're leaving on Sunday. A reminder for those who haven't been up for the past last episode. But because I missed one last week, it was still a lot of stuff to do, and I just couldn't make it in time. And even though I didn't really prepare a new episode this week, I didn't want to cancel again, and I wanted to at least come and, you know, talk to you, and we'll see if people join in chat. I can see Rondon's here right now. Good to have you here, Rondon. And yeah, it's all good. We're, as people join, if they do, well, we're going to be a very chill, relaxed episode this week. And I hope, as I've said before, but next week I'll be a bit more free and have time to actually get into the thick of it and start progressing in our Gerald Clark, which we haven't really started yet. But for now, yeah, I just didn't have time to prepare. It was a crazy day and a lot of stuff that sort of also went wrong and had to fix and delays in the timeline. So anyway, but for those who are following on, PZ, good to see you. Wonderful to have you here as always. For those who also follow me on on my Hive account, I'm happy to say that I have a new video that I'm just wrapping up. I really wanted to finish it before we left, because I have it all on the computer here, so I can take it with me. So I've been working hard on wrapping that up, and I am pretty pleased with the result. We'll see what you think, but it's a bit of a sort of a grand survey of the past year of work that we've had in regards to the TP floor. So anyway, I hope for those of you who are on Hive, you look forward to that and you enjoy it when it comes out. Should be in the next few days, I hope. What do I think of Oriel's updates? Have you been keeping up? Are you liking it? I have been, well, slightly keeping up, as much as I can keep up with anything. I am really liking the updates, but I noticed that I didn't have, I think there was a new update that's out now, and when I went onto the, just the Google Apps regular, what's it called, shop, it didn't allow me to update. So I don't know if it already updated it, but I couldn't notice anything new right now. But I love where it's heading. I'm reading a few of the posts about it, so I really like the direction that it's going in. And obviously, I post the podcast there, and you can follow me there. You can subscribe to the channel; it always helps. Yes, I appreciate all of the listeners out there who are supporting the podcast in general, supporting it on Oriel specifically, and for those who are tuning into the live show. As always, it's very gratifying to actually have people and not just mumbling to myself. But what do you think, Rondon? I didn't see Clown World on there. You don't actually record or make a podcast, do you? You do just the live show. Oh, sorry. From what I've seen. Anyway, let me know. So. So if you saw in the comments, which is, it's weird, I'm actually looking on the computer and I can't see the messages that I sent from my phone. I can only see what Rondon sort of replied. Anyway, you're not using them yet. You want to edit them. That makes a lot of sense. I actually don't edit these almost at all. It's a lot of work. Most people who are actually doing this have an editor, and they just come and make the show, and then the editor comes and edits it, and it's not tremendously difficult work to edit it. It's very menial. I'd be very interested in getting into some sort of scripted, you know, AI or some kind of automatic editing, you know, cutting out the R's and ums, and if they're like sound like spikes or whatever, because it could be pretty possible with today's open source technology. But yeah, right now, oh my gosh, I have so much that I'd like to do, and that I have going on. I can't get into editing them. I'm trying to now, for those who've been listening, you'll notice I'm trying to record a bit of a sort of intro, which is what people do, before I do the sort of live recording of the show. Yeah, and that's about as far as I'm going to take it. We'll see as it progresses. But yeah, no, it's great, and I apologize that I'm not that these last few weeks I haven't been up to standard, but I am pleased that I have this platform, and I do enjoy doing it. It really isn't about that. It's also about prioritizing, and until I can to some extent monetize or actually, you know, turn some decent profit off of this, it has to be categorized as one of those passion projects. So they usually get pushed to the bottom of the pile. But there you go. Such is life. And I'm here now, which is good. And in fact, oh yeah, what I was saying before. So if you read, if there are any listeners online on MSP Waves and on Vim, then type in chat and let me know that you're there, because I never know if there's anyone listening, because it doesn't show up here. But anyway, since we haven't had any specific requests, as we go throughout the episode, you certainly can jump in and ask questions. I'll be honest, I haven't prepared for this at all. About, I think, half an hour ago, as I was putting my son to bed, I thought about this topic, and just generally because it's a, it's a topic that's very dear to me. So yeah, it's very free flowing, and it's going to be pretty casual, and we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it progresses. But if you don't have any other things that you would like to, I agree. I think the Middle East might be a little heavy for me right now, and with everything that's going on, I think I need a bit of a break. Some light-hearted fun subjects would be nice. So I thought we could talk about, the word that comes to mind is VFX, if that's a word and not an acronym. But VFX is pretty specific, and I don't know what most people think about when they hear VFX, visual effects, for those who haven't heard of the term at all. But it's obviously from filmmaking specifically, and visual effects in general have gone back, you know, almost since the beginning of cinema, and they were what's known as practical visual effects, which means you have actual things, whether it's prosthetics or robot, you know, puppets, or you know, lighting fire and filming it and doing all these different copy pastes onto the actual film, you know, before digital. So all of that falls into the category of visual effects. But of course, today, when we think about visual effects, most of us, I think more about CGI, which is computer-generated images, basically completely sort of 3D models that are created in software and then implemented or integrated into either a real scene, or indeed, in some cases, just completely a computer-generated scene from start to finish, where everything in it is CGI. Now, for those of you who aren't up to speed with what's sort of out there and available, obviously, I think most of us have heard of the Marvel, you know, cinematic universe and these big blockbuster films and et cetera, et cetera. But I've heard time and time again, most of the CGI that we actually see is sort of things that can be thought of as set extensions. So most of the, you know, distant buildings you'll see, or most of the sort of trees or the background, which is low detail and most people aren't looking, a lot of that will often be CGI just because it's so easy to do it and much more sort of much less expensive than actually finding the location and shooting it much wider and having all these variables, etc., etc. So visual effects in general is a very broad term, and most of the visual effects are actually not noticed because they're not the main feature. And indeed, when it is the main character or something very prominent in the scene, then it becomes much easier to spot that it's actually VFX of some kind. Yeah. So let's talk about this for just a quick example. I hope this isn't too boring for you. It is a bit of a passion for me, but I promise to link it in the end to what we're talking about and the modern day, how it relates to us in general. We're going to end up talking about deepfakes, which is what I sort of am trying to get towards. But let's start with, Abigail Honey, welcome. Lovely to have you here. So the GIF that Pisa just showed is of a green screen, which I think most of us know. It's that screen that's one color, usually green or blue, and you use that to basically tell the computer to not show that color and show everything else. And the most common instance that we've seen is the weather maps that you know, the people on the news channel always have, where you sometimes see them disappearing into it, or, you know, all these funny things. So that's pretty old technology. Has been around for quite a long time. Oh, Bayer has a welcome. Lovely to have you here as well. We're in a very chilled and relaxed episode this week, so feel free to chime into the chat and ask questions. I'll be honest, I'm not even sure if I'll upload the recordings. We'll see how it goes. It might be just me rambling on a bit. But yeah, anyway, we're talking about VFX. So This type of VFX that we see, the green screen, is basically taking two different sort of films, videos, and then placing them on top of each other. So you have the foreground, where it's the character that you film with the green screen, and then you can film the background as being, you know, flames or a car driving, or you can see in old films very clearly where it's sort of a car, and then the window has this sort of very different looking, very different lit background that's moving completely independently of where they're turning the wheel. So that's the sort of the ancient history, as it were, of VFX. And today, more and more is really being done without with using CGI. So a few noticeable, I think, examples of what was done that was impressive with that was interesting. Hey, Dasiko, welcome. Great to have you. People are slowly trickling in. Welcome. A great instance of this was in Lord of the Rings, where it was using something called motion capture, where the actor, Andy, was wearing a suit that was recording his movement in sort of three-dimensional space, and that was the animation. And then you had this 3D model, this CGI computer-generated character, Gollum, and marrying those two, you got the likeness of him, of Gollum, on the movements of Andy. And if you've seen Lord of the Rings, and you've never seen the behind the scenes of Andy Serkis, Andy Serkis playing Gollum, and the way that he did it, it's very, very interesting to see. I think I found it very interesting at the time. Now it's, what, 10 years old? I don't know. When was Lord of the Rings, the first Lord of the Rings, come out? I have no idea, but ancient history. So we've come a long way from there, obviously, and that was the beginning, in a way, I think. But, not Biohazard? Etnoj. I'm not sure then how to pronounce it. Sorry. Anyway, we're talking about there it is. Thank you. Yeah, PZ. And then read backwards. Hang on. John the Biohazard. Asshole. John the Asshole. Wow. That's a very difficult name to catch on the fly. Sorry for that. The stunned silence. I was trying to work it out. Okay, I'm going to call you John, if that's okay, just from now on. No, but yeah, lovely to have you. It's just the name sometimes startle me. and I'm not at my fully functioning state. I'm pretty sleep deprived. I've been on an average of about 4 hours sleep for the last this week, basically since Sunday. So I'm not up to my usual standard. Well, if you look, I mean, obviously now that you say that, but if you look, it really almost spells like in that weird, what's it called, the spelling, like BIOHZZA. You could imagine that to be, but yeah, I guess I've been calling you biohazard for weeks, I think. So, John, sorry about that. Okay. His dudeness, welcome. So, really and truly, the big thing that has flipped me on all this is seeing how far we've come. And this technology was, when it came out with Lord of the Rings, obviously only open to these huge studios. But as time has progressed, the technology has improved and become more and more available. And as I mentioned before, I've just been starting to get into right at the beginning of Blender, which is an absolutely incredible piece of software. And I'm going to be talking about it a little bit more later. For any of you who are artists in any way, I think it can really offer a lot and a new medium for various different forms of art. But we'll get into that in a minute. Recently, there was a short film, basically, that was released online, which has been, I've been sort of following the making of it. It's a guy called Ian Hubert, who's a very famous, successful Blender and a VFX artist and does a lot of different work. And he's been sort of working on this dream passion project for, you know, over a decade in the sense of sort of making things for it and deleting them and leaving it and starting fresh and doing so, like this iteration he's been working on for the last 2 years, but it's been sort of, he's been refining it, you know, and working on it more or less on and off for a long time, and he has finally released it. So if you are interested in general, you can go and check that out. It's called Ian Hubert Dynamo Dream, and it's episode 1 Cup Salad or Salad Cup? Salad Cup, I think. And the film itself, personally, I'll be honest, it's less my style, this sort of very dark, futuristic, sci-fi, dystopian kind of feel, which is very much his style and a lot of what he does. And I personally just less attracted to it. But what for me was stunning, and what I think most people when they see this is just how impressive and how far forward we've come with photo real videos, you know, completely from start to finish CGI available with the right skills to anyone on their home computer, basically. Yeah, that's the one, Salad Mug. That's the one. So if you check that out, basically almost everything except for the main actor is CGI. I mean, if you look at some of the behind the scenes stuff, and he's uploaded some tutorials of how he's made different parts of it, different assets. Almost everything you see in the film is CGI. So when you get a chance, definitely worth checking it out just to see what's possible. That's basically it. And so for me, this is, I mean, it's two things. First of all, the fact that not only years ago, but throughout history, really, the recent history of filmmaking, throughout the whole process of filmmaking and the technology, it's never really been available. The software is Blender. Yes, thank you. Blender, which is also coming out with a new release. So I'm going to talk about it more, but the whole history of filmmaking was always a tremendously expensive one, and it was obviously much more expensive until the invention of sort of the camcorder, the home video, which suddenly were, you know, available for people to actually buy. But even then, like editing software and certainly, you know, sound and all of the things that come along with filmmaking were still very much out of reach. And today, it's really an incredible situation where with enough time, yeah, and possibly not even really practically so, but in terms of the technology, it's possible to sit down and fully edit, you know, a whatever length from a short to a feature film, And create it entirely in CGI if you wanted to, and make it very close to photoreal to the point where it'd be very difficult, or as Ian Hubert does, have minimal things that are accessible to everyone, you know, one or two actors and very few props and everything else having it sort of CGI, and be able to do everything on the home computer, you know, sound design and recordings, and basically there's very little that's left out of reach for people today. So what does this mean? Oh, I can Blender seems so complex to me. Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, there's a lot of people who talk about that as well, and I started sort of really taking filmmaking a little more seriously and trying to sort of study about it about, I think it was four years ago, something like that, 4 or 5 years ago. And I spoke to some of my friends. I've got a lot of friends who studied film and animation. And I heard about Blender, this open source software. And I was very into, I hadn't started using Linux yet, but I'd heard about Linux. And I was very, very much in favor of open source technology in general, the idea, the philosophy. And so seeing Blender, and I was so excited, and I told my friend about it, and I was like, oh my gosh, have you seen this? It's this open source free software. You can just download it. It does everything that, and he was just so dismissive and said, Blender is really not worth, you know, getting into it. And it's really, it's just a waste of time. And if you want to do this, then I was looking into editing videos specifically. So he was, he said, you know, the whole Adobe suite, as we know. And I mean, I understand, and he really was from the film standard looking to get into the profession, and there's a lot to be said about the pros and cons of Blender. I'm definitely not saying that it's the best, but for me personally, I'm so upset that I didn't start learning that software, you know, 5 years ago, and now have been much more advanced in it. So yes, let's be honest and put the cards on the table. If we'll talk about Blender a second, Blender is quite complex, and the reason it's complex, or at least the reason it's, you know, it seems very complex to beginners, is because of the range of what it can do. There really is almost sort of it's capable of doing so much of what other softwares only do one thing. So in Blender you can create in 3D, but you can also use it for 2D animations, or just, you know, drawings, and you can use it for the editing, and you can use it for compositing, and for animation and rigging and characters and design and sculpting and all of these different things that come usually in many different softwares. Blender tries to and is succeeding offer everything in one piece of software. Now, what does this mean? It obviously means that in the one sense, it will be less specialized. And so for animators who are going into the industry and want to be animators, and the whole animation industry is pretty much settled on a few, you know, professional accepted softwares, then Blender is probably not the best thing for it. But for what I'm talking about, for people at home who don't want to pay whatever it is, thousands of dollars for a piece of software for the, you know, for every year, et cetera, et cetera. Blender can do what can replace the entire suite of other softwares that you would need to do. And even if you want to sort of try out a few of these things and see what animation is like, what 2D is like, what 3D modeling is like, you can do all of that with Blender, you know, and then if you want to get into the industry, whatever. So I'm just saying, it's a very, very robust piece of software, because it can do and is continuing to add on so much. I mean, when you look at people, like, I'm definitely not one who can deal with Blender by any means, but if you watch people who are, you know, who are actually good at it and have been doing it for a while, you can see the potential. You can see just how incredibly powerful it is. Oh my gosh, I can see chat is blowing up. Wonderful. Would you go to source in there? Yeah. Steep learning curve, absolutely. Getting it to work. Oh, the Linux. Okay. So you're talking about the other things as well. Yeah. And again, I mean, there's other softwares as well, and there's other you know, options, definitely. Blender is a very special project. I think everyone agrees that in that way, and it has come a long, long way from really being a piece of software very much on the sidelines and not being able to compete with a lot of these other softwares. To today, really, you know, if not, then at least on the heel and really coming up, closing the gap between Blender and all the other systems. So it is a difficult program to start picking up. I definitely agree. And I would suggest if you're thinking about it to really try and focus and see what it is specifically that you want to learn and sort of focus just on that as opposed to getting lost in all of the options that you can do. But what I wanted to talk about is the possibility in general of what people can use it to and to do, and what almost, you know, anyone who wanted to dedicate the time to could achieve with it. And thank you so much, Justin Harvey. Guys, can you please have slightly shorter names? It has to at least fit on the screen. What is that? Justin Harvey, John Ashby. Is that one person or two people? Sorry, no, I'm kidding. You can have any avatars you want. It just, it challenges me. So, Unreal have just unleashed the Unreal 5. And for those who haven't heard of Unreal, it's a, I'm really not an expert. So in anyone in chat, if I make any mistakes, please correct me in capital letters so I'll see it. Unreal Engine is a sort of gaming engine. It's a game development software that people who want to, develop games can use. It's also, is it open source? I'm not sure if it's open source. I know it's free. I don't think it's open source, but it's free to download. Anyone can, and if you want to get into it, there's sort of two big engines that are competing, Unreal and Unity. I think those are the big ones that I've sort of heard on within 3D gaming. But Unreal, the fifth sort of iteration, Unreal Engine 5, has just come out, and it looks like they say that they are utilizing AI in a new and robust way with a system, and basically to try and condense my very little understanding of it, if you have a piece of software that's trying to simulate, you know, light bouncing off all the different objects, it takes a very, very long time to calculate. And so what people used to do was sort of freeze frame, and it's called baking, sort of take a picture, as it were, of all of the light hitting all of the different objects, and then using that in the environment, so you wouldn't have to actually, because the computer couldn't simulate it in real time. And basically right now, the new iteration Unreal Engine 5 is so much more advanced that it allows to do what would take weeks before, well, not weeks, but hours in real time, basically. So it's a huge, huge step forward in the terms of photo real sort of, you know, physics based or physics simulation, real time video rendering, ray tracing. Krita and 3JS. I don't know how to pronounce it, but there's a few others, like Godot, I think, is also. I'm absolutely not. I know very, very little about game development in general. I like learning about it, but I'm really no expert, and I've never done anything of the kind. So yeah, I shouldn't be talking about that at all. But all of this leads us to another very big sort of advancement. I don't know if we should call it that, development within the world of AI, which is deepfakes. Now, I will offer my own understanding, and again, we're really diving. I mean, this is a very casual, episode, and we're talking about things that I don't know that much about. You know, I do feel that on the other subjects of sort of ancient civilizations, I've been studying it for quite a long time, and I do know my way around. With this stuff, I'm basically, you know, babbling on. And I'm not even sure if most people know too much, because it's developing right now. So, you know, everything is very much still open. But having said that, deepfakes, if you have never heard the term, it's a combination. It's actually a deep learning neural network, and obviously a fake image. So it's training an AI neural network, a specific kind, which is called deep neural network, to be able to watch thousands and thousands of hours of videos of a person, and preferably in sort of lots of different instances. So you take lots of pieces of video of someone, you can get that just from online, and you feed it into this AI, and eventually, after enough information, the AI can actually begin to generate that image itself, sort of in a fake environment. And I think we've spoken about before, but in case we haven't and I've just forgotten, there's also a piece of software that was already a couple of years ago, I think, which does something very similar with audio, as it were, which is able to listen, as it take in audio information of people, of a certain person, and with actually very little, be able to sort of fake the voice and have it say anything that you sort of type in. And I think, I'm not sure if it is available as just online, but that was a pretty long time ago, I think. Audacity. No, I don't think it was Audacity. This was a sort of AI that was developed. I think it was at a university. It was a project. And I can't actually remember the name, but it's, you'll be able to find it, I think, if you look it up, but basically fake voices. So you feed it a voice and then it will be able to, because they did one of Obama saying something at the time, and that was the clip. Anyway, Adobe Vocal. There might be more by now, to be honest, as always with these things. So with the combination of these two, you know, deep fake and this voice faking ability. Dubbed Photoshop for voice. Yeah. Okay. So that's, why don't I remember that it was Adobe? I don't know. Anyway, yeah, Adobe Vocal. Thank you. So, I'm sure it's actually much more common now. It isn't, in fact, a lot easier than video, I think, because as people, especially with listening to digital voices, we're much more tuned. Our eye is much more capable of discerning differences in fake images of people than our ear, generally speaking. But with the combination of these two, and in fact, there's a few channels on YouTube now, they... you can actually generate a completely fake video of anything you want, because if we take all these things together, we take the video, the film VFX that you can do in Blender, you know, for free, and create a scene, whether it's, you know, a foreign country, a small room, whatever, the moon, whatever you care, and generate a specific human that you have enough footage of. So clearly, if you're just talking about a stranger, you know, in the middle of nowhere, you might be able to find something on Facebook, but you might not have enough footage to actually create it. But certainly of famous people and, you know, celebrities, where with the internet, you have so much footage of people and old, and people have done this with, actors and people who have actually died and bring them back for certain artistic endeavors, you can really create a very powerful illusion that I think a lot of us would be surprised at how hard it would be for us to recognize and to really notice if we saw such a thing. And this ties in, you know, very clearly, I think, to today's age of fake news and this whole revolution of suddenly, if once we could trust, you know, what we were told on television by people once it was that a picture was the evidence, you know, if you could actually show a picture of something happening that wasn't just people telling you about it, that was the strong, hard evidence. And then video, you know, a picture can easily be touched up or changed, but if you can get a video of it, then it's, proof. And we're reaching that point where now video is no longer, an option for us to really consider hard evidence and hard proof. How much of our legal system, you know, the court systems all over the world take video evidence from, you know, security cameras as being solid proof. And this is no longer the case. If you want to take, you know, create low res images that look like it's a security camera, that's, I think, much easier to create than high definition photoreal, you know, images. And we're doing that already. So this this whole thing just sort of got me thinking in general about I haven't seen any of these. Oh great, I'm gonna listen to them after that. I don't want to listen now because I'm not sure if it'll be on the audio or not. But oh great, I'm glad you guys have found the audios. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, what I remember is that it could actually do it in very, very, with very, very little audio information. So just by playing it, I think less than a minute of not footage, what do you call it, an audio clip, and it was able to, yeah, pretty much generate the audio that sounded very, very lifelike. And it's it's an interesting thought. It really should sort of make us think of how readily we accept something as being true because of our senses, because we, you know, see and hear it, and myself included, obviously. I mean, everyone, I think when we watch something, even if we know, you know, in a sense that it's not true, even if we know in a sense that it's, you know, skewered or not objective or trying to portray a certain point, our subconscious still sort of automatically accepts it, usually, as truth. And it's very hard to shake that feeling of, you know, well, if I see it, I can't remember that it's not true. And we have it in films, obviously. I mean, when we watch a film, we're not going constantly, oh, that's fake. And if we are, then it isn't enjoyable, and that's ruined the experience for us. You know, same as magic. The whole point is to not be able to see it and to actually let yourself, you know, willful suspension of disbelief, to let yourself believe. But that same mechanism is still around when it comes to media, you know, news outlets. I mean, if you're following what's going on in Israel, not to get into it right now, like, it's pretty crazy, the politics there. And again, it's sort of, everyone is arguing about what's being talked about or what's being shown, you know, on television, on video, on, you know, online, et cetera, et cetera. So it's pretty crazy. He's alive. Tupac Shakur. Yeah, they have, it wasn't Tupac. What was the hologram? I can't remember now. Who was the first hologram that they had in the concert? But there's a, if you don't know, I think, I'm not sure if I have mentioned them, there's a VFX channel if you're interested in deepfakes, and there's a lot of sort of pretty bad deepfakes out there, and some just, you know, funny ones. But there's two channels that I've found. I mean, obviously there's a lot more, but one of them is actually Matt Stone and Trey Parker, who are the creators of South Park, for those who don't recognize the names, have a YouTube channel that is specifically about deepfakes, and they just make deepfakes of, you know, politicians and famous people. Just it's pretty weird. It's pretty wacky. But, yeah, if you want just the comedic or, I think, artistic side of deepfakes as a new form of satire, then you can check that out. I can't remember what it's called now, but if you check out Trey Parker and Matt Stone deepfake, you'll probably find it. What is it? It's the guy who interviews, but I can't remember the name right now. And the other channel is a channel that's actually dedicated specifically to VFX and short films and their sort of YouTube filmmakers. And they have a channel called Corridor, and then they have a sort of behind-the-scenes channel called Corridor Crew. And if you watch for the actual video, that's on the Corridor channel. And then if you want to see how they made it using the deepfake, they made a video of Tupac, a deepfake. And they actually sort of, the way they also did it was that they took an actor who looks a bit like him, who's at the same sort of build, and use that footage to meld the two together. So they took it very seriously, and they tried to make it as real as possible. And it's pretty interesting. I am proof deepfakes are put out there. Are put there, yes. Seems a little crazy. Well, this whole world seems a little crazy. Yeah, Sassy Justice. Thank you, Peter. That's exactly the one. Sassy Justice. I gotta admit, it's pretty weird. I didn't quite laugh at all of them to the same amount. But it was some of them were pretty entertaining. It's also crazy to see the birth of a new art form. I mean, never, I think, in history was it possible to basically anyone who wants to. There's open source deepfake AI, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, it's basically free to use, so anyone could do this if you had a strong enough computer and enough time and a willingness to learn. And you can see lots of amateurs and people who are doing it now. And obviously there is a certain, skill and something to be learned about it. But looking at Sassy Justice that Trey Parker and Matt Stone made, obviously they weren't the ones who were doing the technical side of it, the actual training, as it were, of the network. As is in a lot of these cases, the artists or the producers, as it were, the people who are behind it, decided what it was, wrote a sketch for a certain politician, and in their channel it's the form of interviews between the main character, and then wrote the script of what they wanted the politician to say, and then with AI magic someone went and created that scene, using a real politician who didn't consent. It's pretty wild. It's pretty crazy. In fact, it reminds me of Abigail Honey says Absinthe is free and you can make deepfakes. Oh, nice. Is it it's not online, right? It's a you have to actually download the program and install it, right? I assume. I haven't actually done any of it. I've only watched sort of things about, the a little bit of the network and how it works in general, but I've no idea about the logistics of actually doing it yourself on a computer. So yeah, let me know. Have you tried aging yourself on a couple keyframes? Aging myself? Yeah, you mean with two pictures and like molded? PZ. Oh, you made one, PZ? Oh my gosh, here I am talking about deepfakes. I had no idea that you... Oh, wow. That's pretty trippy that you made one. Nice. I see. You're talking between yourself. Yeah, I love the... Exactly. This whole crazy artistic side of it, which is not in any way, I think, connected to the... it's a sort of unforeseen part from nerdy scientists of computer sciences trying to train AI to, do these different things and understand data, because this also comes back to sort of object recognition. If you can get an AI to recognize a video, see, what the different parts are, what they represent, and that makes it easier to then emulate it and create it again. And so to go from that and that very specific kind of, I think, direction that the scientists were going on, now when it, with technology and with all of these different softwares available and free and open source, you have people, anywhere who want to a certain degree, who can come and create this new, interesting, cool-looking art that Abigail Honey, I love that. I'm just tripping out to it now watching. Is it a famous, who is it? I'm just out of curiosity. But it's so crazy. It's so cool. And that was created, by software manipulating video in a certain way. Anyway, it's pretty wild. It's pretty crazy times. Oh, great to have you, Justin. Yeah, of course. Thank you very much. Glad to have you here. And hope you have a good morning, noon, afternoon, night. I don't know where you're coming from. But wherever it is, hope you have a good day. Stock footage, wonderful. It looks like a ballet dancer, but now my whole looking has changed, and I'm seeing the world through sort of the 3D perspective, and because I've been working with Blender so much and all this like projection of pictures onto 3D space, and so it looks very much like there's this the image in that pose that stays, and then the image is sort of projected on top of it. It's cool. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night. I like that. Okay. So it's actually just one frame, and then the software did the rest of it itself. Sorry. I tried to actually mute it and I accidentally unmuted it just as I coughed. Okay, let me see what... oh my gosh, is that the time? Oh wow, I've been rambling on for quite some time. Yeah, okay, we got about 15 minutes, so we will continue a bit. What did you guys think of this subject in general? Is anyone into, like, I don't know, VFX or 3D? I could see that you're into the artistic side. But yeah, it's just, I'll be honest, I have a friend who's an artist, basically. He's actually a professional artist. And I'm trying to get him into Blender. And this is obviously, I mean, it's a difficult thing. I personally also, when I first opened it, and even, you know, a few times after that, many people, like, it takes a few approaches because it really can be so overwhelming. And it's just, some of it is not intuitive. I do really understand that. It's getting better all the time. And from where it was, which was really far from intuitive and artistic, it's certainly becoming much more geared towards the users and a more friendly UI. Sorry, user interface. But nevertheless, it's a very, very robust and sometimes intimidating piece of it. Well, for me, I mean, and I've been at it for, I don't know, a few months now, and watching tutorials, and on my free time, I'm just watching people using it, not even learning, just to sort of soak it in. And it's still just so massive and gigantic. But I have started to sort of be able to wrap my head around some of it. It's pretty crazy, but yeah. Nice. Where was... Oh, was that just now? FAQ... is that a command? I love that. FAQ Blender, just subdivide the mesh until it's ultra fine. Simple. And I'll tell you why I'm laughing, because that's exactly the stage that I'm at right now, and it's not fine. It's not fine at all. I mean, it's not, it doesn't work, but that's exactly your thought of, like, well, just subdivide it a few more times, get a bit more geometry in there. A lot of people seem to be using that software to make cartoons. I'm interested. So it's Ebsen, you said, what is it? I mean, it just has a bunch of different sort of styles that it can use the frame with, or is it, because I thought it was just this sort of smearing or melding of two frames. Interesting. It's in another server. Okay, I was gonna say I missed that. El Gecko's knowledge for the part. Tell him it's simple. Where is Gecko? Is Gecko here? Oh, yes, El Gecko, I didn't even see you. Welcome. Oh my gosh, you snuck in there quietly while I was talking. Okay, it's got different styles that you... Do you create the styles, or you can sort of download the styles and get... Oh, nice. Oh, wow. Sorry, I'm going to read this just for people who are listening, but you can paint over video and it will look like a painting in motion. That reminds me a bit of the style of that film about Vincent van Gogh. Vincent, I think it was called, right? It just looks like... I think they just took paintings, Van Gogh's paintings, and sort of animated them to be a full feature film. I've never actually seen it, but I really want to. One day when I have time, I will definitely do that. Oh, wow. That's very interesting. So it's, yeah, that reminds me a bit of that other film, Waking Life, right? Where it's sort of, you can clearly see that it's sort of real because of the movement and the animation, not animation, but like the movement of the head is so perfect, but it's not photoreal. It's a very cool style. That's the thing. Like, for me, I mean, I, you know, in another lifetime, I wish I could actually sit down and just, well, first of all, be good enough and talented enough, and then also sit down and make, you know, even a short film or something, like, animated with, like, characters and do all of that. Because it just, yeah, I love it, and I love watching it. It's pretty crazy. But I will never, I don't think, have the patience and time to actually do that. Although, with today, that's the beauty of now this motion captures suits being, you know, more or less within the price range available for anyone to use. You can actually sort of animate these characters yourselves and have a whole crew, you know, a whole cast of people that you just play if you're pretty, not too bad an actor, I guess. That all comes down to, yeah, the question of how you can animate them. But the option is there for those who can do it. That guy in Hubert, you can check, but he does these sort of groups of people, and it's these—it's background characters. It's not actually, you know, important front things. That would be much harder. But if you've got just background characters just doing these weird things, you know, on the road or whatever, then yeah, it's pretty cool that you can just animate that yourself and do it. Oh wow! So I can see now lots of people. Oh my gosh! So all of these are all live footage that then sort of people made with this software into all these things. Okay, so oh wow, I want to check this out afterwards. I'm gonna. That's you, the cat. Wait, what's you? The frightening one. It just looks very alien because of the angles. I can't tell what it really reminds me of Star Trek for some reason. Okay, I'm back, but no audio at the moment. Busy. That's all good. I've got audio. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, okay. Let me see. The rainbow hair. Oh, nice. The faceless. Very cool. What do you do with the art? Do you just like sort of uploading it and sharing it online? Or do you actually, I mean, not actually, but do you also, work professionally selling it? Or I don't know. There's just so much. I'll be honest as well. I am kind of interested in the whole world of digital art. Although I'm just not, I don't see myself at all as an artist in that sense. And I've never really been, what do you call it, plastic art. Like I'm learning how to draw for the first time in my life. And I really am not, I'm just very much at the start of my journey. You know, I'm like, I've always been a musician. I've got a pretty good ear and I feel very comfortable with instruments. And it's exactly the opposite. As soon as it's pen and paper, just everything turns to shit. And I'm working so hard on trying to draw what I see and it just doesn't work. It's very frustrating. But I'm working on it. And I'm improving. That's the beauty of, you sell it as NFTs. You do. I didn't know if it's now like a taboo and it's just such a cliche to ask someone if they sell it as NFTs if you hear that they're digital artists. But I was wondering, I have to admit. Nice. Oh, really? You are? Or are you joking, Rondon? Wow. I'm always impressed when anyone's a professional artist. That's just, it's just crazy. Oh, I'm blogging. Yeah. Oh, nice. And wow, that's very impressive. I wish, I mean, I think in a way that's what a lot of people should be able to do, is just do art and have their art sustain them. I'm very happy whenever I hear people who manage to do it, because I think that today is in a way it's also more competitive and there are more artists, but I think there's much more of a market and more possibilities than ever before, you know, in history. So I'm very glad to hear that. I wish you the best of luck. I don't know. I mean, I've never actually, you know, within this 3D art world, etc., I've never created any piece of art from start to finish. I've now, with this video, by the way, if you listened in the beginning, I've got a video I'm just finishing up editing, and it's the first time that I'm actually putting my 3D models out there. And no, it looks horrible, but it's sort of an architectural. It's very much a model that's meant to show an idea, and it's not artistic, and it's not, you know, it's definitely not supposed to be photorealistic in any way. But it's just so funny to see the relation between sort of where that is and where these crazy, crazy digital artists who sort of spend hours creating these details that are so fine, and so it just looks incredible. Oh my god! Anyway, so we run an NFT platform on Hive. Oh, is that the I think I'm part of the Discord as well, and I've definitely seen. I'm not sure if I'm subscribed. Come join us. And post your experiments. Oh, well, thank you for the invite. You know what? I might actually do that. I think I think it's good motivation to have somewhere to post it, but it's pretty, you know, well, I believe in beginner mindset. I think it's very important to be comfortable with not being good with things. And it's the same with the drawing. It just, oh, it's so unnatural and I just feel so bad at it. But I'm really trying to keep at it and to continue working on it. So thank you. Yeah, I will. I'll join. And for those who are listening, for those who are interested, check out. Is it called NFT? Just the NFT community? Or what do you mean by platform? Is it a community as well? Anyway. Check it out, the NFT platform on Hive, and I will check it out myself as well. I'll see you there. Send me a link and I'll follow you. Everything is art. Music is art, cooking is art, text is art. The art is to do it. What can you clearly define something as impossibly not art? It's hard to find. Definitely. NFTshowroom.com. wow, that's a great website. Good call there. So NFTshowroom.com. Check it out. I will check it out. I'm actually going to copy that right now so I have it. Cool. Thank you. Okay. Go there. You'll see Julia built it with her hands. Wow. Yeah. So is that your like your baby, your passion project? You were, I think, you know what? I'm not very much into digital art and 3D art. I'm now getting into it more and more, and I'm trying to learn about it more and more. But generally, art is pretty intimidating. When I say art, I mean I keep calling it art. You're right. Visual art. That's really what I'm talking about. Visual art has always been very intimidating for me. So that's why, I sort of stayed a little bit at a distance from the whole Hive NFT showroom thing. But I want to go and check it out. Definitely I will check it out after this. I'm getting into it. I'm sort of trying to warm it up. I, as this podcast is called The Discomfort Zone, I'm a very firm believer in discomfort. And in fact, yeah, this I'm just it's good to challenge ourselves. It's good to get out of our comfort zone. So I will see you in the NFT showroom, and I'll be sharing my experiments. And for those of you who are interested, definitely get into it. Get into 3D modeling. It's a really, oh my gosh, I had a lot that I wanted to talk about, but we're nearing the end. You can always anyone can download Blender and make beautiful 3D art, and go onto the NFT showroom and share it there, and sell it, and who knows, maybe you can become professional artists as well further down the line. But I believe in you. I definitely believe in you. If you have the determination to put in the work, you can do it. And if you don't want to, then that's fine as well. What I said about it is still the truth, though. Well built. I didn't see what you said before. I shouldn't read everything randomly from chat. There's a lot that goes on that isn't directed at me. It's just hard. I always think that people are asking me questions or talking to me and waiting for my response. And then when I try to do it and I don't understand, it's a little embarrassing that it was not meant for me at all. It's a little like when someone waves and you wave back and then you notice they're actually waving at whoever's behind you. And you ever had that? Anyway. Okay, wow, guys, we're nearing the end. Is there a show today, Rondon? Posted, post up. I can't see. Is he here? Ha! You see, I made it to the show, at the least. Don't be embarrassed. Well, I'm a little too tired right now to be embarrassed. I'll be honest. I'm very close to falling asleep. I don't know if you can hear. But we made it. We made it to another episode. Oh, no post up today. So, Krim, you're up in 3 hours. No, 2 hours? When is it? Anyway, at later on tonight. Post it in the chat. Okay, well, let's wrap this up, guys. Thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure, as always. I've been Olev. I hope you enjoyed this a little over the place episode, and I'll see you all next week. I hope for a slightly more, on schedule and up to its standards. Until then, have a good one. I'll see you.